That really leads us into the book of Deuteronomy, because the book of Deuteronomy is really Moses' instructions for a people to have the Lord in every part of their lives, every detail of their lives. So please turn to Deuteronomy and chapter 25. Deuteronomy and chapter 25, if you have the sheets, if you want to follow the message on the sheets which give an outline of the message. I trust you got one when you came in. It should be Deuteronomy 25 at the top, actually, not Deuteronomy 24. Deuteronomy 25. We're thinking about seven principles for living, seven principles for life, seven principles for us to live for God into 2019. It's the first Sunday of 2019, and so we ask the question, how are we going to live? How are we going to live? And that question is in many ways being going through our service as regards to the issues even of having a soft heart before the Lord. What a key issue that is. And it is a very important question for us to think about as we get our bearings to go into a new year. A new year gives us a new opportunity to direct our lives into the way of God. Are we just going to carry on as we have been, or do we want a fresh view, a fresh desire, a fresh commitment into going into the new life that God has for us? And in a sense, that was a question the nation of Israel faced as they're on the verge of going over the River Jordan into this special land, the land of Canaan, which God had for them, a place that God was going to give them to live for Him. The question they were going to be asked, they could ask, is how are we going to live? What are we going to do? How's it all going to work out? And that's what the book of Deuteronomy is all about. It's Moses telling the people of Israel, when you go over into this beautiful land, the land that the Lord is giving you, this is how you are to live. In that sense, Deuteronomy is an incredible, exciting book, because it's about a new life for them, a new future life that they were going to live as the people of God. As we thought many times, it parallels the Christian life so very much that we've been brought into a new life. Christianity is about a new life with new desires, with new occupations, with new focus. This is the Christian life. And we're called into a new land. We're called into a new land. That land, in a sense, is salvation land. Okay? Or we might call it, in another phrase, grace land. Called to live a life in the grace of God, in the salvation of God. That's where we're called, in the very detail of our lives, in our homes, in our beds, in our workplaces, in our schools, in our colleges, in our communities. Everything is to be lived out in Graceland, salvation land. Interesting, in our passage, if you go to verse 15, you'll get something of the sense of this grace. End of verse 15, Moses speaks about the land the Lord your God is giving you. Then in verse 19, we read about the land He is giving you to possess as an inheritance. The people of Israel are always being told, this place is not something you paid your money for and you've occupied it yourself. It is God who has given it to you. Christians, this morning, you're not a Christian through your own efforts. You've been brought into grace land, salvation land, by the full and rich grace of the Lord. He has given it to you. Celebrate it as you go into the new year. God has been so kind. So how are we going to live? Well, as we come into Deuteronomy 25, we're going to pick up seven principles, seven different things this morning to get into our lives and to go and live out in this new land. And we're going to get principles for ourselves from what was told to the nation of Israel all those years ago. So let's go then. Let's go to the first three verses and we're going to think about sort things out. Get things sorted out. What's the issue? What's the issue in the first three verses? What's the issue of the first three verses? The issue is there's difficulties. There's a dispute. Two men have got a dispute, says there in verse 1, where men have a dispute. Okay? That's an issue, isn't it? It can be an issue in our families, it can be an issue in our marriages, it can be an issue in our workplaces. And you come across people and you might say of somebody at work, they're no longer speaking to each other. Relationship has broken down. There's a dispute. It can happen in families. It can happen in churches, may I say, Feltham Evangelical Church. It can happen in churches. Relationships can break down. And God is saying to us this morning, sort it out. What's the first thing to do? First thing to do is get things sorted. It indicates that the two men, they seem to have to take the initiative. When two men have a dispute, they are to take the case to court. Okay? And they're to take it to the judges, the people who have responsibility to sorting out matters. Perhaps you've got a dispute and you need to get somebody else involved, okay, to help you resolve it, okay? First point, just take the initiative. Get things sorted out. We don't want broken relationships in our community, in this church, okay? Second thing is, make sure you sort it out properly. Take it to the judge, and the judge is to acquit the innocent and to condemn the guilty. He's not to condemn the innocent, okay? It's going to be straightforward judgment. No personality persuasion, no favoritism, and no corruption, okay? Just a word for parents. You don't have favorites with your children, do you? When you're resolving disputes, you utterly deal with things properly. A word for elders in church as well. Okay? And then there is to be the proper decision as regards to the punishment. And here it is, if somebody is found guilty, they are to be flogged. And the judge is to be there. Verse 2. If the guilty man deserves to be beaten, the judge will make him lie down and have him flogged in his presence. With a number of lashes, his crime deserves, but he must not be given more than 40 lashes. Okay? So the punishment is given. The judge makes sure it's carried out properly, that there isn't anybody who gets involved to make sure that it's either too many or too few, and the matter is dealt with properly. Just as an observation here, it is an interesting observation, and you may want to think about it as regards to our own principles of justice in this country. The way things were in the nation of Israel, there was no prisons. There were no prisons. Everything was dealt with. There was either death, someone was punished by their life was taken. They were physically punished. They had to restore what they had stolen, or they had to give compensation for what they had done wrong, or they were taken into slavery. There was all five things, it appears. If you've got more, you tell me. But no prisons. Does our prison system work as a means of punishing people? Question mark. You can think about that. God didn't have prisons in his method of justice. Third thing then, got two things. Get things sorted out. Make sure you sort things out. Okay, husbands and wives, if you've got problems, be big enough to get others involved. Okay, if need to. Make sure it's sorted out properly. And finally, there's to be no humiliation. End of verse 3. It says you don't give more than 40 lashes, else you'll humiliate your brother. Okay, you'll humiliate him. You'll debase him. Okay? Degrade him. And again, a particular word to parents here. You see sometimes parents dealing with children and you just think they're just humiliating their children. They're calling them all kinds of nasty words and it's just no good. Parents, your responsibility is not to humiliate your children. Your responsibility is to correct your children with proper discipline and justice. So we're not about humiliating people when we are seeking to get things sorted out. No humiliation. So that's my first point this morning, first principle to live by. And we don't know what's ahead as regards to relationships that fall apart, but get things sorted out. Romans 12 says, as much as lies within you, live at peace with all men. I know sometimes people, the other side, don't want things sorted out. That's another issue, but if you can get things sorted out. Second point this morning, okay, is be compassionate to animals. Simply says in verse 4. What's going on in verse 4? Well, the harvest has been harvested. And you've got these big sheaves of corn. And you've got to get the grain out. So there's a machine, a kind of threshing machine, which the ox has. You've got an ox at the front. You've got this machine, you've got this threshing thing at the back, and it tries to sift out all the grain from the sticks, as it were. And a cruel farmer would do what? He'd muzzle the ox. Says, I don't want the ox eating all the grain. I want more for us. So the ox would be going round, and it's muzzled, and it can't eat anything, and it's gradually collapsing. And the God says, don't muzzle the ox. Let the ox have some of the food as well, and it will keep going. It's a compassionate thing. And as a general principle, we as God's children should be we should not be cruel to animals. Yeah? We should have a certain compassion for God's creation. We should respect God's creation. However, there's an interesting further thing, and this takes me on to my third point. And this brings forth some interesting things. The third point with regard to verse 4 is there should be the provision for gospel workers. There should be the provision for gospel workers. And you say, well, where do you get that from? Because, interestingly, this verse is quoted twice in the New Testament. It's quoted twice in the New Testament. I'll read both of them to you. In 1 Corinthians in chapter 9, we read this. Who serves as a soldier at his own expense? Who plants a vineyard and does not eat its grapes? Who tends a flock and does not drink the milk? Do I say this merely on human authority? Doesn't the law say the same thing? Listen. For it is written in the law of Moses, do not muzzle an ox while it is treading out the grain. Is it about oxen that God is concerned? Surely he says this for us, doesn't he? Yes, this was written for us, because whoever ploughs and threshes should be able to do so in hope of sharing in the harvest. If we have sown spiritual seed among you, is it too much if we reap a material harvest from you? If others have the right of this of support from you, shouldn't we have it all the more? Okay? Paul's saying, we've sown spiritual seed. We should be provided for materially. Same in verse 17 of 1 Timothy 5. The elders who direct the affairs of the church well are worthy of double honor, especially those whose work is preaching and teaching. For the scripture says, do not muzzle the ox while it is treading out the corn, and the worker deserves his wages. So the principle is taken from this verse in the Old Testament to apply to the church today, and that those who bring the word, those who supply food, as it were, those who are laboring in order that food would be brought to the church should be supplied materially. And that is a principle that is applied in the church, should be applied in this church. Those laboring in the word, those who are gospel workers, should be provided for by the church. So, but there's an interesting thing here as well. I just want to dwell upon it. Do you see what's happened here? A verse there in verse 4 has been applied spiritually into the church. Okay? The principle has been taken into the church. That's something we've been seeking to do as we've been going through Deuteronomy, is to see these statements as they are there for the nation of Israel and taking them to ourselves in the church. These principles to be worked out. And from that verse, we have confirmation and justification of that approach. So third point is provision. Gospel workers should be provided for. Right. The fourth one is we are to fulfill our duties. Now, we get into this complicated thing in verses 5 to 11. Let's just take stock where we come from. Where are we? We thought we need to sort things out. Verses 1 to 3. We need to be compassionate to animals, God's creation. Verse 4, we need to supply gospel workers, those who are laboring, bringing the word. Right. The fourth one here is that we should fulfill our duty. And we're looking here at verses 5 through to 10. 5 through to 10. What's going on? Well, you've got a man living with his wife. And his brother also lives with them. That's as much as we can tell from our passage. Okay? The man dies without a son. Okay? The married man dies without a son. Okay? The brother-in-law, who's in the house, specifically he says, if you look at verse 5, it says, if brothers are living together, the brother-in-law then has a duty to marry the widow. He has a duty to marry the widow so that the name of the deceased husband will be carried on into the nation of Israel. That there would be the continued line. And with that continued line, there would be continued occupation of the piece of the land for that person. Okay? So that's his duty. However, he may decide, for whatever reason, may decide, I don't want to do it. So you go into verses 7 to 10. You go into verses 7 to 10. In that case, the woman is to go to the elders in the nation of Israel and say to the elders of the nation of Israel, listen, this man won't do his duty. Okay? And the elders are supposed to go to him and say, listen, you really should do this. It's what you should do. If he still says no, then this woman has the right. It seems a bit grim, doesn't it? A bit direct, but that is where she has the right to, says verse 9, his brother's widow shall go up to him in the presence of the elders, take off one of his sandals and spit in his face. And say, this is what is to be done to the man who will not build up his brother's family line. It's a kind of shame. Shame on him. Because he's not fulfilled his duty. And it says, that continues on in verse 10. The man's line shall be known in Israel as the family of the unsandaled. So that's what's happened. Now we don't know why the man might not want to take the other woman. He might just say, well, I just don't like her. There's a hint in verse 10, only a very vague hint, I have to accept, that he might be interested in another lady, because there is the prospect of another line being established. We don't really know. But what we do know is there's shame on him for not doing this. So I want to draw your attention to one phrase which occurs in verses 5 to 7. Verses 5 and 7. What does it say in verse 5? It says, going towards the end of verse 5, it says, if brothers are living together and one of them dies without a son, his widow must not marry outside the family. Her husband's brother shall take her and marry her and fulfill the duty. Fulfill the duty. And then in verse 7, we have the phrase in verse 7, at the end of verse 7, he will not fulfill the duty of a brother-in-law to me. What do you think about that? What do you think about that? That is just totally opposed to our culture. Do you know that? This is absolutely radically opposed to our culture. Now, some of you older ones, it's probably not so opposed to your culture you grew up in, but the culture of this country has gradually become more of a culture which emphasizes what? Feelings? Convenience? Pleasure? Feelings, convenience, pleasure. So what is it? How does it work out? If you feel this is who you are and what you want to do, just so long as it doesn't hurt anybody else, then go for it. Fulfill yourself. Be yourself. Alas, duty, commitment, and responsibility are foreign words to our culture. But they should not be foreign words to Feltham Evangelical Church. duty is a very important thing. Parents, you have a duty. When those babies were given to you, you signed up not to feelings, pleasure and convenience. And some of you are knowing it only too well at the moment, and God bless you as you stick with your children. But duty, commitment, responsibility. You know, the brother-in-law, he might have said, well, nobody asked me to be a brother-in-law. It was my wife. It was my brother who took her as his wife. I didn't bring this on myself. And God says, well, whether you brought it on yourself or not, that's your situation. You see, so many people just want to dodge responsibilities because they don't feel that it's something they want to do. And God says, no, duty. Brothers and sisters, elders of this church, you have duties to perform. Work responsibilities, you have duties to perform. Husbands and wives, you have duties to perform. And one morning, you can't just get up and say, well, I don't feel like being a husband today. I'd just rather go off and enjoy my day with another woman today. You just haven't got that outlet. Brothers and sisters, duty is a very important thing in the sight of God. It's a character asset, which is very, very valuable. Younger ones, as you're growing up, be people of duty, responsibility and commitment. And you will be very valuable people. Well, that's my fourth one then this morning. And it is fulfill your duty. Fifth one then this morning. And it's a little bit difficult to tease out what is going in verses 11 to 12. But I come to this. Don't stop life producing processes. And it's a delicate issue what takes place in verses 11 to 12. But two men are fighting, and one, the wife of one of them comes along and grabs the private parts, as the word is gently put in the NIV, and as a result of that, she is to be punished. Her hand is to be cut off. And what is this to do with? I take it even connected because it flows on from verses 5 to 10, the duty of raising up seed there in verses 5 to 10. And also the word used is it's quite a strong word. It's a seize word. She seizes. And I take it that as a result of this, it is putting in jeopardy the fact that this man would be able to be married and to raise up seed. Because she has attacked him in that very delicate part of the male anatomy. And that is why she is punished. Because God is interested in the ongoing seed, the ongoing raising up of the generations. And she is stopping those life-giving processes. And on the basis of how things are applied, even in verse 4, I just want to make application as regards to the spiritual implications of that. Don't hinder life production processes in the church. Okay? What does that mean? Well, I mean the word must come. It's the seed of the word which brings life into Feltham Evangelical Church. And when it's watered by prayer, it brings life into Feltham Evangelical Church. And we need leaders into Feltham Evangelical Church who would be bringing that. So encourage leaders who bring that. I tentatively put it to you along those lines. I think it's a reasonable understanding, but we need the seed of the word. Life-giving processes should not be hindered, should not be put in jeopardy. This church will die. There won't be another generation of Feltham Evangelical Church if the life-giving processes are stopped. If that man is stopped from having children, the generation ends with him. If the word is stopped from Feltham Evangelical Church, we might exist as a church, but really we stop being a church for God. Okay, that's the fifth point. Don't stop life-producing processes. Right, well, should we have a stop again? So we thought, what did we think about? First point this morning, sort things out. Second point, care for animals. Third point, provide for gospel workers. Fourth point, fulfill your duty. Fifth point, don't hinder life-producing processes. Sixth point, honesty. Sixth point is honesty. What's going on in verses 13 to 16? Well, it's something like this. It's something like this. You've got a farmer. You've got a farmer. And somebody comes to sell him fertilizer. So he gets this weight out and written on it, 10 kilograms. But actually, it's 12 kilograms. But don't tell anybody. Okay? So when the man comes for his fertilizer, he pays him for 10 kilograms. But actually, he gets 12 kilograms because his weight was manipulated so that when he bought something, he'd get an extra 2 kilograms for himself, free of charge. Is that honest? Children, was that honest? Not honest. On the other hand, when it comes to selling his grain, he's got another big weight. Another weight, and that's got 10 kilograms on it. But actually, don't tell anybody. It's only 8 kilograms. Okay? So he sells his grain. He gets the money for 10 kilograms. But actually, he's only sold 8 kilograms, and he's kept 2 kilograms for himself, which he can make some further profit on by selling to somebody else. Any weights and measures trading standards officers amongst us? Perhaps you might go and find that farmer and sort him out. Was that honest? Straightforward? It's just for himself, wasn't it? Verse 13. Do not have two differing weights in your bag, one heavy, one light. Do not have two different measures in your house, one large, one small. You must have accurate and honest weights. Verse 16, the Lord your God detests anyone who does things, anyone who deals dishonestly. What do you think, Feltham Evangelical Church, this morning? Are you you shade things sometimes on your tax return in your favour? Do you? Or what else could it be? It could be your words, which are not quite as pure and as honest as they might be, because you know it'll make yourself easier for yourself at work if you say things a certain way, and you won't get in trouble. Okay. Are we honest people? Are we honest people? The Bible says in Matthew chapter 5 or chapter 6, I think it's chapter 5, let your yes be yes and your no be no. Okay? We don't need to bolster our words. Because Christians always do what? Always do what? Always tell the truth. We're always honest. Even when it hurts us. We're always honest. Mr. Fitzgerald, an elder of the church where I was when I was first a Christian, he was in the prisoner of war camp in Germany. And when it came, obviously they suffered very little food. But when it came to dividing up the food that they got, do you know who was asked to do it? Mr. Fitzgerald. He was an honest man. And he would divide it up properly and equally for everybody. Are we known as honest people? I trust we are. Finally, number 7. And again, it's a little bit difficult to tease out what's going on here. But I put it care for the weak. You've got the Amalekites here. The Amalekites, they came against the nation of Israel when they came out of the land of Egypt, when they'd been delivered. And they, in Exodus chapter 17, we have one incident. Numbers chapter 14, we have another incident. And they were enemies of the nation of Israel. But particularly the verse we have to focus on here is verse 17. Verse 18. When you were weary and worn out, they, that is the Amalekites, met you on your journey and cut off all who were lagging behind. They had no fear of God. They had no fear of God. Who did they attack? Who did they attack? Who do you think most likely to be lagging behind? Everybody's weary. Who do they attack? Any thoughts? The ill? The injured? The elderly? Most likely. The vulnerable. And they cut up God, cut them off. There's no fear of God. So what does all this mean? What is it to fear God? It is to respect God for who he is. And who is the God who is the true God? He's a God who's got a tender interest in the vulnerable. He has a tender interest, and we saw that last week at the end of chapter 24, in the widows, the orphans, and the aliens. Our God cares for the vulnerable. He cares for the weak. Okay. And if we fear God, we will be ones who are wanting to do things after his heart. And these people have got no fear of God, and they don't do things after the heart of God. And they'll just carry, cut off the ill, the elderly. Yeah, they're the easy pickings, aren't they? Okay? The easy pickings. There's no care for the weak. No care for the vulnerable. Okay. What would be a word to describe these people? I'm going to put it to you that they were bullies. They were bullies. What do bullies do? Bullies exploit the weaknesses of others for their own advantage. And they find them in your school playground. And you find them in your offices. And sometimes you can find them in families. And sometimes, do you know where else you can find them? You find them in churches. Okay? People who exploit the weakness of others for their own advantage. Okay? And we should not be like that. The nation of Israel were to remember this. It says right at the end of chapter 25, don't forget this. Don't forget this. As if he's saying, when you're carrying out the judgment against these things, which the nation of Israel were called to do, they were not to forget. Not to forget why the Amalekites were being judged. People of God, Feltham Evangelical Church, we are to be those who take care in the vulnerable. Who are the most vulnerable in society? Well, one category which we should be thoughtful of is the unborn, isn't it? The unborn. Scandal of this country since 1967, the vast number of babies that have been slaughtered in the womb. And we should be concerned about it. As a general principle, no bullying. Children, I say to you, if you want to follow the Lord, when others are bullying others who are vulnerable at school, you don't get involved. And neither do we in our workplaces. We help the vulnerable. We love to care for the weak. Very easy in a church situation to think, well, there's somebody. They're going to be really gifted at evangelism or really gifted in helping other people. Or, we'll concentrate on those. And those who are perhaps not mentally as bright or whatever, you just ignore them. No, everybody is precious to this church. This is God's life worked out. So we have seven things this morning. Seven things, principles to remember for us to go and live out as a church, as God redeems people. And they are, we are to sort things out, get issues sorted out. We are to care for God's creations. We are to provide for gospel workers. We are to fulfill our duties. We are not to hinder life-producing processes. We are to be honest and we are to care for the vulnerable. Where does that leave us? It leaves us simply wanting to remind ourselves again from verses 15 and 19 that this is God's call for God's people. God is taking us into a land that he's given to us, and this is how we are to live in this land. The nation of Israel had it, we have it. It's a land of grace because it's a land given to us. It's a land won through the precious blood of Jesus Christ. It's a land that he's achieved through this one offering on Calvary's cross. So these seven things this morning are not meaningless things. They are grace things flowing into our lives from the cross of Calvary. I'm not calling you this morning to some just do better kind of approach to life. I'm calling you and saying, Christ has died. go and live this way for the glory of God, with the fear of God upon our lives, and with a desire to appreciate that a precious blood has brought me into this salvation land. And therefore I love to live out these ways, and I love to walk in these purposes, and I just sense that this is God's hand upon me. And go back to verse 15 and you see, when we do walk in these lands, there's a promised blessing. Promised blessing. What does it say there in verse 15? You must have accurate and honest weights and measures so that you may live long in the land the Lord your God is giving you. And go to verse 17. He speaks about him giving rest. Verse 19 rather. When the Lord your God gives you rest from all the enemies around you in the land he is giving you. These are the blessings of God that we can know as we go on in this gracious, wonderful life that God has given to us. That he can know him blessing us. We can know peace with God from God.